Climbing, centering your mind and delight on The Art of the CEO, the show that brings you the most fascinating and, well, really the most helpful people from around our terrestrial orb. I am Bart Jackson, your Hieronymus Bosch of business. And what do you think? Should we just wait for the next Sandy-style superstorm to smack us and then shell out another $72 billion in cleanup and repairs? Or should we adopt some preventive protection for our coastlines at about one-fifth the cost? Well, my friend, there are two good bits of news on this solution. Number one, there does exist already proven storm surge barriers that can be erected at our ports and that have actually shown themselves to be effective in places like New Bedford. And number two, and this is the really great value here, we have leading the charge against the threat of these storms and sea level rise and our collapsing deplorable infrastructure. We have an actual rarity. We have Mr. Bill Golden, who has energetically devoted his public service career to bettering and helping the people. Alas, a rarity. And just to give you a foretaste of how fervently this former Massachusetts state senator believes in safeguarding us against these threats, Bill Golden is planning an astounding sailing adventure on a lightship all around the continent to raise awareness for sea level rise and aging infrastructure and storm prep. And, well, you really just need to listen to this crusading man. So whether you are the regional environmentalist and scientist who's been fighting the awareness fight for decades, like Joe Pilka, or you are a reinsurance executive terrified by the recent high payouts, like Sarah, pull up your chair a little closer. Join us at this feast of wisdom, all carefully cuisined, to make your careers thrive and your ventures flourish. Bill, I'm so glad that you've chosen our port into which to share your storm of controversy and hope. So glad you could be here.
Well, Bart, it's definitely a pleasure. I've been called many things in my life, most of which I couldn't repeat on air, but calling me a rarity is a first.
Oh, yes. Well, what is it Ernie Kovacs always said? They call television a medium because it is neither rare nor well done. But anyway, we've had Hurricane Sandy, and it blew through. For those of you who are on a certain end of the spectrum, that was what they call a hurricane. And it was just one, but this was just one superstorm. I mean, it ravaged America, left $71.8 billion in repairs in our wake. But really, that was a rare fluke, right? I mean, this is not sort of going to come our way again in our lifetime, right?
But extreme weather, such as Superstorm Sandy, is not a rarity. It is going to become the norm. There is a new reality here. Mm-hmm. And since 2004, 13 of the most destructive storms ever to hit the United States have occurred.
Wow.
So 13 out of 14 since 2004. They're coming, and they're coming strong, and they're going to be incredibly devastating.
Well, I've heard people say about this. I was talking to Will Happer, who is a astrophysicist over at Princeton and a denier. He says, well, we've had many other great storms, but there is one difference. Look at where we have positioned ourselves by the millions compared to 1904 or 1986. The damage is going to be greater because we're right on the edge.
You're right? Absolutely correct. Now, up to 60% of the population lives within one county of the shoreline. And this has been a historic development. You know, back in the days of waterborne transportation, when there weren't cars and there wasn't railroads or anything else, people sought communities on the coast.
Sure.
And that's the origin of our cities.
We Americans move to water the way French moves to wine. Absolutely. Well, now, with this storm threat facing our coastal cities, you're also warning us about sea level rise and aging infrastructure. From Maine to Florida, give us an idea. What is the state of our eastern coast as we are facing it in terms of the threats of sea level rise and the structure we've got?
On the eastern coast,
yeah,
particularly in the northeast, we're extremely vulnerable. Of all the cities in the United States, New York City has been determined to be the most vulnerable to storm surge and sea level rise of all the communities, but there are many others.
Mm-hmm.
Boston has just hit with three devastating nor'easters. I filed a lawsuit to clean up Boston Harbor, just to clean up the harbor, but the unintended consequence of that was the development of $30 billion of investment along the shoreline in this now beautiful clean harbor. Unfortunately, when that was built and designed, it wasn't built for the new reality of sea level rise and extreme storms. And the flooding from these three nor'easters was devastating. So that is a city that's considering storm surge barriers and other structures. But we also have Norfolk, Virginia, which is suffering from not only the sea level rising, but from the land sinking, subsiding.
Yes, you go back by The Hague, and it literally is it's more flooding than it's been for – I have relatives down there, and there's more flooding there around the back area than there has been in decades.
And you go down to Florida, and you can see Fort Lauderdale, which is – I have a picture I use in my presentations of a beautiful house with a for sale sign. Mm-hmm. It looks like a house anyone would want to buy. The next picture of that house is with water 3 feet up the side of the house. Beautiful sunny day. Same day. From a king tide. Miami Beach could be gone in 30 or 40 years, although they're still building on Miami Beach.
Right.
New Orleans is also sinking.
They'll be building as it's going down there. I mean, as it's going down, they'll lower hammers down to people through the wells. It's incredible.
It is incredible. And New Orleans is the same way. They lose a football field size of earth every 56 seconds and lost 28 named places last year. So this is an enormous problem along the East Coast, the Gulf, and actually even up on the West Coast. San Francisco is really concerned about Silicon Valley being inundated.
I am too, but I don't think you're talking about being inundated with water. But nonetheless, let's not go there. Now the solution to mitigate, you've said, is a what you call the storm surge barrier. It's going to prevent us from the next $72 billion smash catastrophe. Explain, what is the storm surge barrier, and how does it work, and where has it worked?
First of all, the solution to rising sea levels and extreme storms varies completely depending on the demographics and the geography.
Okay.
But in New York City and New York and New Jersey, the solution is a solution that's hundreds of years old. It was used by the Dutch, and it's called shortening the coastline.
Mm-hmm.
We propose building a barrier from Sandy Hook in New Jersey to Breezy Point in New York, a five-mile stretch across the New York Bight, and another barrier on the Throgs Neck, about a mile.
What's this stuff made of? What's our barrier made of?
Well, these barriers are constructed with different materials and different designs for the location. The one that we want to build...
Is it natural? Is it stone? Is it metal?
It depends on the area. Some of the early ones, the crude ones that caused environmental disasters, were simply a barrier, a solid barrier of stone put out there that caused
Mississippi levee kind of stuff.
Yeah, and inside those barriers, if you were cutting off a marine environment, it died. So they were an environmental disaster. That's your grandfather's storm surge barrier. The newer ones, like the Thames Barrier in London, which is over 40 years old, is a series of like bridge abutments, stanchions.
Yeah. Okay.
And in between those are plates that lie in the ground, and they pump the water out, and they come up, and they form a solid barrier. Now, the London Barrier has been closed 173 times since its origin, and has never failed. It has protected London from floods and inundations and storm surge and sea level rise that have devastated the surrounding area. Now, there are two phenomena that we're focused on, storm surge and sea level. Two very different phenomena.
Oh, yeah.
Storm surge comes from extreme storms. Yeah. It can be of varying elevations, but we know it's going to be of increasing elevations. Sea level rise is very slow. It's methodical, but it is also increasing in height. New York City, for example, next 50 years or so.
It's like an evangelist versus a Quaker.
Kind of like that, yes.
Right. Okay.
You're right on the same track.
Okay.
But the sea level rise will be about 3 feet in New York City.
In what period of time?
In about a 50-year time.
Say that again.
If the sea level will rise approximately 3 feet, that's the most aggressive level. It goes from 1.5 to 3 feet. But 3 feet is what a lot of scientists believe is going to be the level of sea level rise in New York City. And then by the end of the century, by 2100, just about 6 feet. So you can build a wall along the perimeter that is 3 feet tall right now.
Right.
It doesn't stop people from getting to the water. It's easily... constructed, it's inexpensive.
I can launch my canoe, my motorboat, my whatever I want to.
Through it or over it or whatever. However, if you try to protect from sea level rise and storm surge by a barrier along the coast,
yeah,
it would have to be 25, 30 feet high.
Oh, right.
So
right.
You put that barrier out to sea to stop the storm surge. You stop the sea level rise by a very modest, barrier, a seawall.
And the storm surge is sort of a floating affair, I guess, isn't it? Or not floating. It rises. It pumps.
What happens with the storm surge barrier is it's open. It doesn't stop the flow of water. Doesn't increase turbidity
or trade going in. It's not going to stop
commerce. It's not going to stop recreational boating or whales or any kind of pelagic fish or biota. It's going to just flow back and forth.
So snakes and politicians can come in too, right?
Well, I don't know. Getting from New York to New Jersey, I think you're going to need a passport in the future, so I'm not sure politicians are going to flow through this. But anyway, and the eye of the needle thing as well.
Evil of two lessons, whatever.
Yeah.
Yes.
But really, what you do with this barrier system is you close it at low tide.
Right.
Now imagine a landside barrier would probably be closed at least a day before a storm hit, maybe 2 days, when you don't even know if the storm is going to get hit. So if you're getting hit by a storm every 15, 20 years, you might be closing this barrier two or three times a year during that period when it only needed to be closed once, disrupting the economy, business, farmers, the population. However, with this one, you close it just hours before, the last low tide.
And with today's technology, we know when the storm is coming.
We know
when
at that point. When it's hit. So you close it, it's low tide, no death. 40-odd people died in Staten Island from Sandy. No death, no devastation, no $20 billion worth of damage in New York City, which Mayor Bloomberg said by 2060 would be $90 billion worth of damage. No damage at all. It's just low tide.
Right.
And there may be wind and rain, but that rain is flowing into low tide. Now imagine if you built a 20-foot wall around Manhattan. And Sandy was a windstorm. It wasn't a hurricane.
That's true. But it came at a time. It came at a moon time for high tides, which is what really made New Jersey hit so terribly.
Yes.
And Cape Cod.
It still could have been very bad, but it was worse because of that. No doubt. But the National Academy of Sciences has said that your 100-year storm is likely to become your 25-year storm.
Okay,
and so what people tell me is
so we're all going to see our next one. We're going to see the next Sandy, and regardless of what political aisle you sit on.
And that's an important point. That's a big point because these used to be looked as acts of God or acts of nature that occurred once, maybe in three generations. I mean, the big hurricane for me was the hurricane of 38, which was my grandfather's hurricane, not mine.
Right.
But now with this increasing frequency, we're going to see several in a lifetime. And as we see those, if we don't prepare for them, we're going to have that kind of economic burden on us. Now, up to now, the federal government has been paying 90% of the cost of those losses.
Yeah. Cool.
Under this administration, in this fiscal austerity that we have in government, that's not going to happen anymore.
No.
So what happens when the $70 billion doesn't come from the federal government? That means we have to come up with that money. That means we're going to rebound slower. We're going to be bound at a lesser level of economic viability after a second storm or a third time.
So what you're saying is that if we're going to that it's better to come up with a cheap preparation because it's going to be tough raising the money to build it. It's going to be virtually impossible to come up with a cleanup afterwards.
It may be possible, but it's going to take us longer, and we won't come back as strong.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to The Art of the CEO, which every Tuesday at 2 p.m. streams magically through the profoundly misunderstood realms of cyberspace, and where you may listen to this show and all our shows by downloading, just visiting theartoftheceo.com. We are on several live broadcasts and a host of streaming internets. The easiest way is just go to theartoftheceo.com. And just before we get right back into it, I just want to explain to you, my friend out there, a little bit about the gentleman whom we're having speaking here. This is the tenacious Bill Golden, crusading state senator, city solicitor. Bill, just to give us an example, could you name for us one of your great triumphs that you have worked on in the past while you were in public service, just to give us an idea.
I could more easily name my losses, but you know, I've had the privilege of being able to work with a lot of really motivated, passionate people,
and it is.
You know, and I've had the opportunity together to have some successes. I think that one of the accomplishments that we together were able to achieve that I'm most proud of is the cleanup of Boston Harbor.
Oh,
that was a
wonderful.
You know, when I filed the first lawsuit to clean up Boston Harbor, that ended up creating something called the Massachusetts Water Resources Authority,
right.
Which is an agency that has planned, developed, constructed, operated, and maintained a water and sewer system for 51 cities and towns.
Sustainable development.
It has created this system, and it's for the city of Boston and the 50 surrounding communities. And we did it because at a time that nobody wanted to do it. There had been 100 studies about how polluted Boston Harbor was.
Right.
There was a study of how many studies had been done. But nobody had done anything. And this is the important point with all of the
facts. Dress up the white elephant rather than take him out of the stairs.
Let's live with him, you know, and pretend he's not there. You know, I mean, the issue in our society today is we have to think differently. We're facing realities that we have never faced before. And in order to do something together, we have to come together as a society, come up with solutions, come across the aisle. I worked as a Democrat. I worked with Republicans all the time to come up with solutions. We have to come together as a community, come up with practical
Hallelujah.
Solutions, but big ideas. We can't shirk away from the big ideas. We can't see ourselves as victims. You watched all the coverage of Harvey, of Rita, of Maria. It was not 10 seconds about preventing those disasters. It was all that we were the victims of those disasters.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that I saw there was a great difference. I take a little bit of Garden State pride here. When I looked at the difference of after Katrina and the whole New Orleans idea was, where are the people coming? Help us. And New Jersey was saying, well, get your shovels, boys. We got to get this stuff fit. We got to get it stopped there. But even so, I agree with you. And it's a big idea. Okay, your storage surge barrier is big. It sounds wonderful. It sounds great. It sounds expensive. What kind of money are we going to have to come up with to, just one coast. Let's just take the East Coast. What kind of money are we going to have to, or are we talking about here?
We're talking about investments of billions of dollars. There's no question it's going to be expensive. But we have to look at the alternative. And when we look at the alternative, we have to think on a multi-generational basis. What we're trying to do with the storm surge barrier system is to protect New York City for 100 or more years, for several generations. And when you say, one, is it worth protecting? It's going to be so costly. Is it worth protecting?
I think you could find a lot of answers to that one, but go ahead.
Well, New York City, I'm a kid from Boston, as you can tell from my accent.
So,
my dog is from Fenway, you know?
Your feeling is let it go.
No,
I'm
not
sure
at all.
You
know, at one time it might have been. You know, I'm still not a big fan of the Yankees or the Jets or the Giants.
Oh,
but,
bite your tongue.
But
anyway.
But New York City I've come to love because you can't spend time in New York City, as we have done, without realizing he is an incredible expression of the human spirit. 400 years of blood, sweat, tears, and dreams that has created a fabric of activity that is vibrant. It's one of the, if not the biggest center of economic activity in the world.
It is.
It is the great, most diverse city of any city in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
This is worth saving, at least as long as we can. Now, after 100 years, 150 years, if we don't do something about climate change, we're going to be facing,
anyway,
you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 feet of water. And maybe you can't save New York City at that point. But the 100-year period will give it a chance to figure this out.
Okay, Bill, I'm going to give you a $72 billion budget, because that's what the last cleanup was. Can you put the storm surge barriers up for less than that?
We can put this storm surge barrier we're talking about that would protect New York and New Jersey with an 850-mile coastline in the Port of New York and up to Albany. For about the same price as one Sandy. So if you're and if you imagine how many Sandys or how many real hurricanes be over the next 100 to 150 years.
Yeah, right. That's amazing.
And we frankly, we don't have a choice. The mayor of Boston just came out and said, yes, this is costly, but we don't have a choice. This is existential. If Boston wants to continue to exist, we've got to make this investment. And as we make this investment,
The Lowells and Cabots can save it.
Not even the Lowells and Cabots.
All right. Bill, I think this is, you've really taught us a lot, and I believe that after all he's rushed upon us, it's time to take a brief survey from all the wisdom that Bill's been giving us. And so allow me to give you a few utensils for today's Feast of Wisdom. And the first utensil, as I always do, allow me to remind each of you hearing my voice that the good Lord has gifted you with the title and privileges of chief executive officer of yourself. And since that's really the most important position you'll ever hold in your career, allow me to ask, will this be the day that you take a good look at those roadblocking fears and assess what percent are real versus imagined? Or will you continue to just slip on the comfortable old shoes and scurry cringingly all around the old familiar path? The choice, my friend, is truly, truly yours. And as a second utensil, I can sense your yearning to steep your lips into a little laughter and taste the scriptural recitation from the 102 Best Business Quips book. And today, by the great good theories of Ganesh, we have, you will be hearing your quip from guest announcer, Mr. Braden Golden. Braden, what is the quip you have chosen for us?
The quip is today is, if you can't afford to pay your people, what are their worth if you need better people?
Absolutely true. Right. Wonderful. And, you know, as an afterthought, I've often thought that if you don't value your people above your ability to take care of them, you should look at that. And fortunately, I always said I believe in hiring people smarter than myself. Of course, they say in my case it's impossible to do otherwise. Anyway, as a third utensil, by the way, if you smirked a bit over that quip that Braden gave us, we've got them literally by the books full. Just visit bartsbooks.com and pick up your copy of 101 or 102 Best Business Quips, and it will give you a rich arsenal of load-lightning laughter to cheer up all your fellow chain gangers at work. And as a third utensil, we sumptuously spoon to you the answer to last week's business quotations, and that is, who was the name of the person who said, fortunes are made by buying low and selling too soon? Those words, my friend, were spoken by none other than the head of Europe's great banking family, Mr. Nathan Rothschilds, who also makes a killer Cabernet, but that's another story. So congratulations to you, winners, and stick with us, because later in the show, blurting your way, comes another enriching quotation. And if you are among the learned souls who knows the name of that sage, scribble it right down and send it right off to info@bartsbooks.com. And if you're correct, your knowledge will earn you a soul-stirring gift, freshly disemboweled from the dungeons of Bart's Books Bookstore. And before we return to Bill Golden's climactic superstorm preventions and his grand sale, allow me to introduce to you the company by whose good graces we're here today. That company is Prometheus Publishing, creator of, among many other divisions, Bart's Books Ultimate Business Guides. And you may visit bartsbooks.com and explore a wide wealth of wisdom from business masters. And this very day, folks at Prometheus invite you to take a look at the book which launched this whole bizarre radio show. It is also entitled The Art of the CEO, and it's a volume which, well, it collects and it distills the most masterful practices of business leaders from around the globe and presents them to you in a way that you can apply to your own career in business. And that is going to make all the difference in the world for you. This book has been praised by radio show host and CEO himself, Daryl Gunter, who said, quote, one of the best business leadership books I've read in my career, full of wisdom. What are you waiting for? So carpe diem, my friend. You are worth it. And now, with utensils in hand, let's float our boat back onto the ravagement solutions provided by the farsighted Mr. William Golden, president of the National Institute for Coastal Harbor Infrastructure. Now, Bill, as I understand it, you have several plans for funding the storm surge barrier project. One of them involves enlisting insurance companies. What is one of the ways, how can we pay for this relatively painlessly?
Well, a few weeks ago, we had a symposium that was located at Goldman Sachs World Headquarters. Mm-hmm. We invited a number of experts in, mm-hmm. and there was a panel that presented options on how you finance massive coastal infrastructure projects, traditional options and innovative options.
Right.
And one of those options, which was presented by Marvin Marcus of mm-hmm. Goldman Sachs, was a concept where you would put a surcharge on insurance policies. So this would be automobile policies, real estate policies. And the idea would be by collecting a little from a lot of people, all of whom are impacted by these storms, whether you live on the coast or not, you could fund the revenue stream that's necessary to pay off the bond indebtedness. And
that's sort of an expansion of flood insurance, if you look at it, right? I mean, people who are living at in-risk areas pay a little higher premium, and what you're doing is just revealing to the world, hey, you living in the loft on 41st Street, you're at risk too.
Yeah, somebody says, why should I pay for it if I live 50 miles inland? The question is that when New York City goes down and the entire port of New York goes down, it's the third largest port in the country, mm-hmm. the economic impact of that is regional. Just under 12th Street in Lower Manhattan, just from 12th Street down to the Battery, they create 17% of tax revenue for the state of New York. So if they're down, then anybody in New York is going to suffer financially in many different ways. Yeah. Also, the people that work in New York and the businesses that thrive in New York City or along the Jersey coast in the port of New York are really are sources of employment for people that live 50, 60, 70 miles away or more. So that economic impact affects you anyway. So paying another $20 on your combined insurance costs could well preserve the health and vitality of the economy, the value of your home even, for years and a century to come.
You're absolutely right. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, and we haven't talked to about one thing that I think is one of the most amazing. This is the 21st century Kon-Tiki. What we have here, Bill has bought a lightship. This is what a codfish state senator is doing with a lightship, and he's going to make a great sale. Bill, briefly tell us what in Kevin's name is a lightship, and why are you outfitting, and what the heck are you going to do with it?
Well, lightship is a floating lighthouse.
Oh,
and
all right.
My wife and my son and I own two of them. And two of them. And these are antique floating lighthouses. Mm-hmm. And we bought them to preserve them, but also to preserve the tradition they represent. These lightships were based to warn people of hazards. And because both of them served the Nantucket Lightship Station, their beacons, the lights on top of the masts on these ships, greeted immigrants from 1854 to 1983.
Yeah, sure.
So if you came to this country and you saw that light, you know you had arrived in America. So the lights became known as the beacons of hope and warning.
Wonderful.
And taking those beacons of hope and warning and trying to see the hazards that live beyond the horizon. You can see these lights beyond the horizon.
I can see where your metaphor is going, and you are going
to
do what?
We're going to circumnavigate the continental United States, going port to port, focus
Wonderful.
On this new reality of rising sea levels and extreme storms, and building a coalition that can speak with one voice and one agenda as a wake-up call to this country that we have to address this new reality, or it will impact us as a national economy and our national security in a detrimental way that affects us for generations.
I don't need to believe in climate change. I can say it's a liberal plot, but I can still believe and get behind what you're doing, right?
Senator Cornyn from Texas doesn't believe in climate change,
right.
Doesn't believe in rising sea levels, doesn't believe in earmarking. Last year he earmarked $350 million to build a storm surge barrier, design the storm surge barrier,
right.
And just got the lion's share of $15 billion from the president's latest budget to continue with that design and construction. We have this threat to our national security and our national economy that has to be addressed, and if we don't do it, we not only cause this problem, I believe, but we're failing multiple generations in assisting future generations to address it successfully.
And what do we owe our generations?
We owe a moral imperative to do something about it and to act now and to face this new reality rather than denying it.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is, I think, Bill has just spoken a timeless truth. And this is a quill pen moment. I would like you all to take out your quill pens, dip them in the inkwell, and jot that down, what he has just said, that we owe the next generations a moral imperative, and it is a responsibility incumbent upon us alone. Bill, if I want to help, if I want to help you float your boat, if I want to learn more about climate change, if I'm looking for a speaker with a triple-digit IQ, how do we get in touch with you? How do we learn more about this?
You can log on to nichiusa.org, nichi.org. That's the acronym for the National Institute for Coastal and Harbor Infrastructure. Or you can email lightship, like light bulb, lightship612@aol.com.
Wonderful. And, of course, you'll be able to find all that information again on theartoftheceo.com under Bill Golden's profile. And, so, Bill, thank you so much for coming on. Can we seduce you and Braden back sometime?
Oh, absolutely. This is a pleasure. And you, sir, are a national treasure. You should be on NPR, not just in this country, but around the world. Your wisdom, your insight, your humor. Perhaps most of all, so we all, you know, don't slit our wrists when we see these problems, but we're motivated to do something and to use that most divine spark of the human spirit, free will, which we all have. We are the CEOs of ourselves, and we should take that responsibility as our ultimate and primary responsibility.
From Bill Golden, there truly can be no greater compliment. So as we round out today's feast, I am Bart Jackson, your curator of business wisdom, leaving you with today's business quotation. That is, whoever said, and this was in a newspaper ad, he said, "Men wanted for hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return doubtful, honor and recognition in case of success." And as a hint, A, it was not Bill Golden's ad. B, it was you get an extra prize if you can determine whether this explorer was advertising for help for a trip to the South Pole or he was talking about marriage. And remember, if you know the author of this quote, simply scribble that sage's name down as you believe him or her to be and send it right off to info@bartsbooks.com. to win an absolutely career and life igniting gift from the dungeons of Bart's Books Bookstore. And as a parting shot, in the words of my wife's husband, there's a fine line between self-promotion and arrogance, and I've erased it. So, and to you, gleefully sharing today's feast, I hope you've enjoyed the Art of the CEO show as much as Braden and Bill and I've enjoyed bringing it to you. And remember that you may download this on all our shows at theartoftheceo.com. And finally, to you, who have honored us with your time, may I say, as always, it has been a privilege. I thank you.